Welcome to season two of Motivate Me, a show where we interview people who have incorporated a passion into their lives in order to inspire you, my fellow motivators, to do the same. This is Motivate Me, and I'm Lynette Renda. Ladies and gentlemen, special surprise on today's show. We know that this is a special pre-trip episode as Motivate Me is preparing to go on our 50-state tour. So on today's show, we have Tom Powers. Tom lives just outside of New York City. He is the documentary curator for Doc NYC, as well as the Toronto International Film Festival and Sundance Now Doc Club. And most recently, he's the podcast host of the show Pure Nonfiction that launched today. On Tom's show, he finds the answers to things like, how did first-time filmmakers pull off the show Making a Murderer? How did a producer from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart become the showrunner for The New Yorker Presents? And how did a lawyer become an award-winning Sundance director? As well as things like, how often stories behind the scenes are as dramatic as what's on the screen. And on top of all of that, Tom is also a teacher and a Master of Fine Arts program in social documentary at the School of Visual Arts in New York. So Tom, welcome to the show here.
Thank you very much for having me.
I am so excited to talk to you on so many different levels. Number one, I am a movie fan. I love movies, period, always have. And number two, you know that on our 50-state tour, we will have a cinematographer with us, and we are planning to shoot a documentary. We will be shooting, so we're hoping that what we come back with is going to be something that's really quality for a documentary. So I'm so interested in all the great things that you have to share with us today.
I'll tell you whatever I can.
I love it. So now you know we start the show with a quote that's meaningful to our guest. Do you have a favorite?
I gave this some thought, and I wanted to pull something from a documentary film. And so I turned to a film that I showed at the Toronto Film Festival in 2010. It's a film called Boxing Gym by Frederick Wiseman. Frederick Wiseman has been making films for almost 50 years. He's made, I think, over 40 films. Each one focuses on a different institution. So he's made films inside a ballet company, inside a zoo, inside a high school. And in his 2010 film, Boxing Gym, he's filming inside a boxing gym in Austin, Texas. And sometimes when we think about boxing films, we think about fighting. But this film is really about training for boxing. In fact, I don't think there's any matches in the film, maybe a little bit of sparring. But there is a moment in the film where the gym owner is talking about the people who come there to train and the difference between having intentions to train and doing it. And he sums that up. He says, saying it and doing it are two different things.
How do you connect with that on a personal level?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of experiences of starting things from scratch. I started the Doc NYC Festival along with the folks at the IFC Center. I started a film festival in Montclair, New Jersey, the Montclair Film Festival. Both of those things I did with my wife, Raphael Nehausen. And in the lead up to starting something, and you know, the latest thing, as you mentioned before, is this new podcast that I've been doing that I just started really today. In the lead up to starting something, there's a lot of talk about it. And you know, that talk maybe starts in your own head, then maybe gets shared with your friends, and then maybe gets shared with strangers. And there's that, you know, transition moment between the time where you're just talking about it to the time that you actually start making it happen. it's a tricky one to navigate, but it's a very meaningful moment when you actually start doing something rather than just talking about it.
You know, I just had this thought this morning because I was thinking about the people that I kind of represent, not as much on my podcast here with my audience, but in who I will be in this documentary. And I actually thought to myself, you know, I'm not different than any other woman my age. I'm really not. I think the only difference is that I act on things.
There you go.
So where did your passion for film begin?
It began early. I mean, I liked films probably like every kid does, although maybe I liked them a little bit more because I wasn't such a sports kid. But I think it became more serious as a teenager. I grew up in Detroit or in the suburbs of Detroit, went to high school in the city. And almost every weekend, I would go downtown to the Detroit Institute of Arts that had and still has an excellent film program where they would show documentaries, international films, American art house cinema. And particularly in Detroit in the 1980s, when I was growing up, it was a cultural outlet unlike anything else I was getting. And so that was really where my first love of film and especially documentary film started.
And so how did you start moving into filming? Like, what was the first thing that you did?
I took a little detour. For about 7 years, I worked in publishing in different really kind of independent presses. I didn't go to college. I moved to California and I worked for a small publisher called Fantagraphics Books. That's a comic book publisher. But by my mid-20s, I felt like film was something I wanted to give a try. And also film had changed a lot. You know, there was the emergence of digital cameras and digital editing systems that made the cost of film production a lot lower. So the barrier to entry was lower. And in 1994, I moved to New York. I teamed up with a woman who became my business partner for 10 years named Mima Spadola. And I just felt like the best way to learn how to make a film was to make a film. And that's what we did. She was the director, I was the producer, and the first documentary we made was interviewing women about their breasts. It's called Breasts, a Documentary.
You are making me feel so good, Tom, right now. You're giving me so much confidence to say, you know, because I think, and this is not just me, this is everybody who's out there, whoever thought, you know, well, why can't I make a film? And like you said, technology really allots us that privilege these days that a lot of people did not have before. So I'm saying to myself, you know I'm going to be remembering our conversation and just the words that you just told me about your history to say, you know, and the people that you have coming up on your show recently, coming up soon, is why not you? You know, if you can go out and you can give it your best shot, and I know myself and so many people listening who maybe have wanted to try to get into film, like just to make a film for themselves and then see what they want to do with it later. But it just gives me a lot of confidence to say, you know what, just nose to the grindstone, worry about it later.
Well, on the new podcast I'm doing, Pure Nonfiction, one of the things I try to do a lot is ask people about their journeys into filmmaking. So in episode number 2 that's going to be released later this week, I talked to a woman named Dawn Porter, who started out in her career as a lawyer and was drawn to filmmaking and made a big, you know, mid-career decision to walk away from a very comfortable job as a lawyer and take the risk and go into filmmaking. And she's made two terrific, very well-received films, one called Gideon's Army about public defense lawyers in the South. And her new film came out this year is called Trapped, which is about abortion providers in the South and the incredible pressures they're facing from state legislatures. That's also very timely with the backdrop of the Supreme Court case that's being heard this year. You know, it was very striking to me to hear Dawn's story about how she made that career transition.
And I interview people who do that all the time. That is the premise of my show, is sometimes people just incorporate a passion, or sometimes they take a leap into a different career. And so I get that. And, you know, you can't help but look at all of those years she was in law and how she's using that in her film career.
That's absolutely true. I think that, what I found as I've made different career shifts over the years is that everything that I did before, even if I didn't understand the relevance at the time, comes back to serve you later.
Exactly. I just believe it's all part of our process. And then once we get the skills and know the people and know the techniques, then we're ready for the next step. I believe that.
I'll tell you where I really learned that is in the 10 years I spent as a filmmaker, I was very focused on making my own independent documentaries. But lots of times I would have to take other jobs, for the money. They might be making a profile about a corporation or a nonprofit or even just like going out and filming something as a favor to someone else. And often I would feel on those jobs like, oh gosh, here I am doing a video for an oil company, which is something I did once, and I'm not, I don't feel that great about this, and I wish I could just be back doing my own documentary idea. But inevitably, I always learned something on those projects, and they took me places that I wouldn't have gone otherwise. And when I look back, I'm grateful for those opportunities.
Right. Right. So what kind of hesitations or challenges did you have transitioning from, this secure kind of position that you had with a publisher into getting into film?
Well, I wouldn't call that position secure. Working in independent publishing was about as fraught with risk as independent film.
Did you get a steady paycheck there?
Nah, barely.
Because I haven't gotten a paycheck yet in what I'm doing.
Yeah, I know that experience too. I've certainly launching my own podcast has been a lot more cost than revenue. But I think in anything that I've started, whether it's a film or a film festival or podcast, the first thing to get over is just your own slight embarrassment about it. It can be a little bit embarrassing saying that you're going to do something that, that maybe people think like, oh yeah, sure, you're going to do that. Sure, you're going to make film. Isn't everyone making a film now? Sure, you're going to do a podcast. And you look, in a way, it's very healthy to face that skepticism, because lots of times ideas pop into your head and they aren't what you should be doing. So you do want to put yourself through that skepticism and criticism, because maybe you should be filtering out this idea and moving on to something else. But if you can listen to all the negative reasons that people throw up about why you shouldn't do something, and answer them for yourself, at least, that's a good start to getting on with it.
And so many times people are saying negative things to you because that's what they tell themselves about not taking risks and not stepping out. It's too this, it's too hard. That's crazy. That's their own projection onto themselves they put onto you.
I think that's true.
It's their own fear that you see. But that's hard. It is hard. I'm with you. I started a karaoke business, which is small scale, but at the Jersey Shore when nobody knew what karaoke was. And then I started a podcast, and so many people still don't know what a podcast is. So it's like I'm creating things from scratch too and teaching at the same time about what these things are. And I feel the same way. They're like, what do you mean you're taking a 50-state tour? Or, oh, sure, you're going to shoot a documentary. But you can hear my own doubt when I say an intended documentary, right? Because I don't have the confidence yet.
So on that 50-state tour, where does Hawaii fit in?
Hawaii fits in right after LA and right before Vegas.
Gotcha.
It's in there. Everybody goes, they say, even Alaska and Hawaii. I said, yep, Anchorage and Oahu. That's where we're going there. So I've never been to either of those places. With this journey of yours, what have you learned about yourself?
Yeah, good question. The main job I do right now is as a film festival curator, which means I watch hundreds of documentaries each year and try to pick the ones that I think are best and most meaningful for different outlets. So the biggest platform that I work for is the Toronto International Film Festival that takes place in September and is one of the world's biggest and most significant festivals. I've been doing that. This is my 11th year doing that. And that's, you know, we probably get about 500 documentary submissions and I can show about 25 to 30 films. So it's a, you know, it's a real process to pick those films. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I've learned in that process is to try to be open to things outside of my own, you know, set of expectations, you know, to try to anticipate new directions in cinema and be open to that.
That's a challenge.
That is a challenge.
I mean, you need to be very innovative and get into the minds of all these different people who are not like you.
Yes. I mean, it, you know, it requires a conscious act of humility sometimes.
Right. So if somebody's out there right now and they say, I'm really interested in filming a movie, specifically, even if it's documentary, do you have a book that you would recommend for them?
Great. Great question. The book I would recommend is not necessarily like, you know, a how-to documentary for dummies type book, but it's a book of conversations with a great filmmaker, Werner Herzog. The title of the book is A Guide for the Perplexed. It's conversations between Werner Herzog and the author Paul Cronin. And that book is, I mean, it's full of moments of profundity. It's full of moments that are funny. It's, you know, Werner Herzog's films include Grizzly Man. I'm talking about his documentaries now, Encounters in Grizzly Man. He's looking at a guy in Alaska named Timothy Treadwell, who was kind of obsessed with filming grizzly bears before tragically being killed by one. Herzog made a film called Encounters at the End of the World, where he travels to Antarctica. He has a new film coming out about volcanoes. His films are notable for taking us to extreme places that we would never go otherwise. And he's a great conversationalist. So that book, A Guide for the Perplexed, is what I would recommend.
Do you have a favorite documentary?
That's a good question. I have dozens of favorite documentaries. And I think that when we talk about documentary film, something that is important to recognize about these times is that documentary is an umbrella term for many different kinds of filmmakings, many different kinds of genres. There are music documentaries and political documentaries and documentaries about food and documentaries that are confessional and documentaries about unusual characters. So at the head of the interview, you described one of the places where I curate is an online platform called Sundance Now Doc Club. That's like a boutique version of Netflix for documentary lovers. We have hundreds of documentary films on that site, and you can subscribe and watch them all. And so rather than answer your question with a single documentary, I would point to that platform, Doc Club, where I've been able to curate hundreds of documentaries across many different genres.
Wow, that's an amazing answer. I was not expecting. I had a feeling you were going to say it would be very difficult to select one, but I didn't know we were going to get access to your entire bank of favorites.
There's a lot of them there.
That's awesome. Okay, so I believe, Tom, in order to get people to act, they have to envision something for themselves, explore what it would take, and then execute a plan. So for somebody to get the confidence to create a documentary, What do you think they need to envision or see themselves doing or feeling or being in order to do that?
You know, I've heard it said about the documentary maker Errol Morris, who won an Oscar for his film The Fog of War and made other great films like Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control and The Thin Blue Line. I've heard it said that before he makes a film, he designs the poster for the film. And that's on hearsay. I've actually never asked Errol himself to confirm that, but let's go with it. Let's say that he does that. And I think that there's something to that idea that that you design how you want this film to be received by the world before you make it.
It's almost like, I mean, I don't know, I'm taking a guess here, but it feels like it's almost like a graphic organizer of it, almost like a visual outline of it, by creating that, the images and the, is that what that is?
I think so. I have a friend who's a writer named Lawrence Joseph. He wrote a terrific book called Lawyerland. He's also from Detroit, went to my high school, the University of Detroit Jesuit High School. And Larry said that his advice to writers is to walk into a bookstore and picture your book on the shelf there. And he used that as a kind of, you know, his own motivator to get there. You know, the only way you're actually going to see your book on the shelf is to now go home and spend the time in the chair writing it. I always thought that was a good way of envisioning something.
Yeah, and they say that you can map your brain. So once you see that and you continue to envision it, your body just starts to work towards it. So to explore then, what should somebody explore if they'd like to film a documentary or a movie?
I think you should start by watching as many other documentary films as you can and try to get a sense of what you like and what you don't like. So, you know, for a road trip movie, you know, there are some other films that are about road trips. There's one I can think of called Parallel Lines by the filmmaker Nina Davenport, which she made after 9/11. Nina Davenport lived in New York City but happened to be in California working on a job at the time of 9/11 and the attack on the World Trade Centers. And she decided to take a long journey back to New York City by driving across the country and in a way kind of trying to take a measure of what the country was feeling at that time. And I think it's a terrific road trip documentary. So that's one I'd recommend. Another great road trip documentary is Sherman's March, a real classic by Ross McElwee. In that case, Ross had been commissioned to make a film, a historical film, about the actual Civil War event of Sherman's March. I don't know if I should say he was commissioned or he'd gotten some grant money to make that film, I believe. But instead of making that film, he made a kind of personal diary film that encompasses many things, including his own search for love and meaning. So those are two road trip documentaries that for you personally to explore, I would suggest watching Parallel Lines and Sherman's March.
I'm going to get right on that too. So to execute a plan, what's the first step?
I think there probably is no one single step. In a way, you have to allow yourself to let it be a little messy and not worry that you're doing it the wrong way, because I think there probably is no wrong way to start anything. And you just, you know, come at it. When I was starting this podcast, Pure Nonfiction, you know, there's a huge checklist of things that I need to do, like starting with buying a microphone. And I spent a lot of time like obsessing, like what microphone should I get? And, you know, you could let weeks go by not getting it going because you're waiting for something perfect. So, you know, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good.
I can relate Totally. So what final thought would you like to leave everybody with today?
Let me turn it over to someone else's words. For anyone who wants to make a documentary film or any film, really, I'd recommend to them a list of 10 rules by the Russian filmmaker Viktor Kosakovsky. That's Kosakovsky. Viktor Kosakovsky. And you can Google Viktor Kosakovsky's 10 rules. And I won't name all 10 of them, but I'll just give you a sampling. It's his rule number 3. He writes, don't film if you already knew your message before filming. Just become a teacher. Don't try to save the world. Don't try to change the world. Better if your film will change you. Discover both the world and yourself whilst filming. I think that's a terrific message. And I think all 10 of these rules give you something to think about. But my favorite is number 10, which is don't follow my rules, find your own rules. Right. There is always something that only you can film and nobody else.
You know, as a writer, I see such a connection between everything that you've been saying. Even that rule is, you know, because if you want to write something and you feel like, well, this has been done before, but it hasn't been done before because it hasn't come from you, and your perspective is going to be different, and that's what's going to make it special. And it sounds like this is the same thing.
I think that these rules, you know, while written for filmmakers, can probably be applied to lots of different practices.
Right. So how about some contact information for you? I know everybody can go on iTunes and they can look up your podcast, Pure Nonfiction, but you also have a website.
PureNonfiction.net.
Okay. So PureNonfiction.net, everybody, to check out Tom's podcast and to get in touch with him with any questions or anything like that you have.
Yes, there's a contact form on there. And on Twitter, we're Pure Nonfiction. And my own personal Twitter account is Tom, T-H-O-M, Powers, P-O-W-E-R-S.
So before I say goodbye to you today, Tom, I want to give everybody a go-do. And one of the things that you said was about the execution. So for everybody to get started, we need to push past perfection and just get moving in the direction and don't allow ourselves to be paralyzed in any way. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Just overcome your own fear of embarrassment.
That is such a great point. I love that you said that because I can relate to that. You know, who am I? Who am I? And everybody, these stem from our own limiting beliefs. But, you know, just like Tom said, push through, get started. And somebody on the show last week said, just give yourself 3 minutes. Get in it for 3 minutes. And I really find that once you start that 3 minutes, you start feeling better and all the anxiety kind of falls away a little bit. Tom, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. And, you know, I have to say, in the course of starting this podcast, my team has turned to you for different bits of advice, which have been very valuable. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, you are welcome. And I wish you the greatest success. I really do.
Good luck on your road trip.
Thank you. I need it. That's it, everybody. Please remember that you motivate me. I'm Lynette Renda. Visit our website, motivatemepodcast.com, for links to all of our social media, for our Motivate Me YouTube channel, where we're posting video of our trip, and for an application to be on the show. There is also Motivate Me merchandise on our site, as well as the ability to contribute a tank of gas or more to our road trip if you so desire. There are 191 episodes in season 1, and season 2 is going to consist of the journey my crew and I experience as we travel around each of the 50 states interviewing people about passion. When we return, those episodes will air, and that will be season 3. So let us take you on this journey and let us motivate you to take action in your own life. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. This enables us to reach out to more of you. In the
world keeps turning and I just keep moving along.